Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Like the Wednesday after MLB All-Star game, that game is generally the quietest day in sports. Generally, traditionally, usually, definitely, it is. But not this year. This year was different. And if you don't believe that, it's because you were not near a TV or you were not near Instagram. You definitely were not near New York City. Now, a lot of you, some of you, are not going to like this, but I feel pretty strongly about this. Yesterday in New York City, that's where the U.S. women's soccer team, yes, I said it, the U.S. women's soccer team had a ticker tape parade through the Canyon of Heroes to celebrate their World Cup win. And to continue their absolutely epic rager. Now, I've seen plenty of teams win a championship or a title. I've seen plenty of teams celebrate a victory. Normally, it involves a bunch of champagne, maybe some beers, a few cigars, and then the parade. Recently, some teams have mixed in a trip to Vegas as well. But nothing compares to what these ladies are doing. Nothing. Now, if you know me, you know I'm all about the beautiful game. Always have been, always will be, love everything about it. You know this about me. However, I'm not sure I've ever seen anything better than this when it comes to the sport. I mean, this really is awesome. They win the title in France on Sunday with that 2-0 win over the Netherlands. And they did it with an absolutely clutch performance because the Dutch played out of their minds. They were unconscious in the first half. And for a long time, that match had the feeling of a game where one team is dominating, where it's one-sided, but they can't quite break through. Then the underdog scores on a break to take the lead, and suddenly it's a completely different game. But although it felt like that, that's not how that played out. Megan Rapinoe scored a penalty in the 61st minute, and Rose Lavelle capped it off with a goal 8 minutes later. And the moment they got back to the locker room, the party started. That party started in the locker room, and it has not stopped since. I mean, sure, at first, it had the typical post-game locker room tropes. Champagne, beer, confetti, singing, we are the champions. But I'm telling you, not only has it not stopped since then, it's gone up about 50 notches since then. I didn't think it would get better than shortly after the match when Ashlyn Harris started posting video on Instagram and said, and I quote, "You're bleeping welcome for this content, bitch."
You're f***ing welcome for this content, bitch.
You're bleeping welcome for this content, bitch. But I was wrong. Man, I was so wrong. Because it has absolutely gotten better. Like, when you think of the great moments in celebration, in the history of celebrations, what do you think of? Of course, one of the first things that comes to mind, Chase Utley.
World champion. World champion.
We're talking about the greatest celebrations ever. If you want to break them down, William Gay, with this epic blast, comes to mind.
Pittsburgh just won the Super Bowl. Here we go. Yeah! Yeah!
Ed Reed, with his monumental shout-out to the Lion King.
Mufasa! Mufasa! Mufasa!
Man, that was good. That was really good. But I'm not sure that was as good as the same guy singing Eddie Money.
Yes, sir, Baltimore. We got two tickets to paradise. We got two tickets to paradise.
Ed Reed, if you need him. Alvin, with the tip of the hat. How about Dirk? Dirk leading a song.
We are the champions. No time for losers. We are the champions.
And then, of course, the godfather of all celebrations, Mark Madsen.
Thank you.
Yeah!
Les agradecemos y les decimos que el año que viene lo haremos otra vez.
Gracias, El Perro. All good. In fact, all incredible. But I'm not sure any of them had the audacity or the awareness to preface it by saying, and I quote, "You're bleeping welcome for this content, bitch."
You're f***ing welcome for this content, bitch.
So let me be the first to say thank you very much, Ashlyn. Thank you for taking on the role as team videographer, because it has been a crazy ride, and this really is some of the best content ever. Now, I would play the videos from her Instagram page, but I'd probably get fired. There is definitely some NSFW content there. Sufficient to say, it's been an epic bender that has covered two continents. They have been on planes, yachts, parade floats. They've celebrated at rooftop pools and in New York City Hall. And it's been absolutely incredible. And you know what? It makes perfect sense. That team had so much pressure on it going into the tournament. Anything else less than repeating as champions would have been a colossal failure. They were under so much scrutiny, so much pressure for everything they did, everything they said, and yet they still came through. And they did it while suing their own federation for equal pay. I mean, can you imagine how different that lawsuit would have felt if they didn't win the World Cup? The legal reasoning behind it would have been exactly the same, but the public pressure behind it would have been a whole lot less. Anything short of winning was going to be a failure on so many different levels. And nobody came through better than Megan Rapinoe. Listen, I know Rapinoe is not everybody's cup of tea. Rapinoe knows she's not everybody's cup of tea. But even her biggest haters have to admit she's clutch. Clutch as hell. When the spotlight was on her, all she did was win the Golden Boot as the high scorer of that tournament, the Golden Ball for player of the tournament, and the World Cup for her team. And she did all that despite missing a game with that hamstring injury. So when you do the job, when you accomplish the mission, and the pressure is off, then the party's on and on and on. In fact, that party may never end. In fact, every time you think it's over, it's not. Every time you think that crew has completely celebrated out, they grab another bottle of Ace of Spades, they fire it right back up again. Living their best lives does not even come close to doing this justice. And honestly, they do deserve every second of it. They've earned it. They've got 4 stars on their shirts. They've got about 50 gallons of spilled champagne as well. And I've got no issue with it. In fact, I'm here for it. But again, not everybody digs this American team. In fact, some folks are pretty bent. They're bent that they want equal pay. You're probably not going to like this take either, if that's the way you feel, but I don't understand that. I mean, honestly, I can't believe we're even having this discussion. They are the 4-time world champions. They're legends. They should be paid like it. And as much as I respect the work that my guy Greg Berhalter has done since he's taken over the men's team, and I do, there's no denying that the women's team is way more accomplished than the men. All right, and for whatever reason, some of you still have an issue with equal pay, equal pay. How about this? According to audited financial statements from the U.S. Soccer Federation obtained by the Wall Street Journal, the ladies generate more revenue than the men. They generate higher TV ratings than the men. So, of course, they should be paid equally. And everybody should want to see that. It should have happened a long time ago. And when it does finally happen, there will be another epic parade and another epic party. And then you can run it all back once again. So as always, thank you bleeping very much for all the bleeping amazing content.
You're welcome for this content, bitch.
It is summertime, so everything should be perfect, right? Well, it's not. And you know why that is? The bugs, the flies, they're invading your home. They're taking over. But then again, you know me. I'm not one to pose a problem without a subsequent solution. I've got it. My pals over at Dynatrap are coming through for you. Dynatrap, the leading manufacturer of outdoor mosquito and insect traps, and now they've come up with a solution for indoor pests. the Dynatrap Flylight. The Dynatrap Flylight works day and night to attract and trap flies, also fruit flies, mosquitoes, other pesky insects. It works. I've got one. We're killing it with it. Never mind those disgusting, repulsive fly strips. The Dynatrap Flylight looks like a subtle nightlight, and it plugs into any indoor outlet. Get yours right now at Dynatrap.com. That's DynaTrap.com. Enter the promo code ROME and get 15% off any of their products. Dynatrap, the safe, silent, and simple solution to household insect control. I'm joined right now by a cornerback for the Seattle Seahawks. He had 61 tackles. He had 8 passes defensed. He had 2 interceptions last season. He was the 90th pick overall in 2017 out of UCF. I am joined also by a linebacker for the Seattle Seahawks. He had 11 tackles last season. He was the 141st pick in the 2018 draft at UCF, and the two of them are authors of a book. It's called Inseparable, How Family and Sacrifice Forged a Path to the NFL. The book came out on Tuesday. Of course, I'm speaking of Shaquille and Shaquem Griffin. Fellas, good to see you both. How you doing?
Doing good. Thank you for having us.
Good to see you. Now, I want to talk about the book in a minute, but how is life treating both of you? Shaquille, let me start with you. How has the offseason gone?
It's been going great. I feel like we took the little, you know, journey to kind of make sure get our body completely right. So we trimmed all the way down. You know, again, our body, we want to be in the best shape ever. And the offseason, it was good to us. We definitely enjoyed it. It's been moving pretty fast, but, man, it's been great.
Shaquille, let me ask you one more thing. We go back to last year in the draft. You had already been with the Seahawks, mm-hmm. and you had really started to establish yourself. What was it like to see the team draft Shaquem and know that you'd be playing with your brother once again?
Oh, man, that was something special. It was very emotional. That's one thing I can say. It was an emotional moment. And being the one to see the number first before he actually did, I just remember seeing the area code. And I seen that number, and I had to bust into the bathroom just to find him. So, man, it was emotional. I just remember having the whole family just sitting there hugging each other and crying. It was an emotional moment.
That's great. Now, Shaquem, more than a year later, what's it been like to play with your brother in the NFL? Like, from the outside, it seems like that's got to be a dream come true. What's it felt like to you?
It definitely was a dream come true, and it still feel like a dream sometimes because, you know, as a kid, you know, you're growing up hoping that you can get to this point, get to this level, and just to be at this level at the same point, at the same team, and, you know, living together, it feels like so real right now because it's like we go to meet together, you know, we go to practice, and we back home trying to see what's our next meal. And, you know, I won't change for nothing in the world. I mean, it's an amazing thing. It's like we're still dreaming.
The brothers Griffins joining me in studio. Now, Shaquille, the natural question is, when you come out with a book, why do you write the book? And you've said the reason to write the book is you come from a family that has a story. And this is a family that says if you have a story, you should tell that story. Why was it important to share the story now?
I feel like it's important now because, you know, everything that's been going on, you know, after the combine here and my brother getting drafted, you know, we continue to ask about, you know, how did it come apart to, you know, what he went through and, you know, what happened. So it's like, instead of just giving bits and pieces, let's just tell the whole story. And then we want to be those guys that want to try to change, you know, the world. And, you know, I feel like our story can help do that. And we want to be able to relate to, you know, other people and everybody. So I feel like it was just that time to kind of give all into it. You know, we're young and I feel like this is the best time. We're on the best, you know, stage to do it. And I feel like it's the perfect time. And then go ahead and just tell the truth and get everybody to see everything about us and kind of know exactly who we are.
Shaquem, what about you? What's the process been like to put this down on paper and to put this in a book and to share your story? I mean, you've told your story a number of times, but to write this thing down, to sit with your brother and do it, what's that process been like?
It's been an emotional ride. I mean, for me, we talked about it in college, and for me to actually do it, at first it's like, oh, I'm not sure. I'm thinking I'm ready for that part of my life to just put everything out there. But, you know, as you go on through the years and you tell your story so much, it's like, maybe it's time for them to hear the whole thing because, you know, it's not about me. It's not about just playing football. It's about who I can help and who I can inspire. And it's not just me just going through adversity. It's about the adversity I went through and how I was able to handle it. Sometimes people learn from example, and then that book can give you an example on how you can always have that second chance and say, you know what, I made this mistake, I can do this. Oh, I had this type of adversity, now I need to go do this. And it feels good to kind of put it on paper because I know it can help so many people because it helped me.
This book is out right now. Shaquem, let me ask you about adversity. Like, you've been through so much. You've overcome so much. You opened the book by writing about the experience of the draft. Now, the fact that they told you and your family you were invited to the draft, that's a great thing. You weren't selected in the first round, which was not necessarily a surprise to you. But Roger Goodell invited you back because he was certain you'd be picked in the second round. but that didn't happen. And then you weren't drafted in the third round. What was the experience like for you?
I mean, it was definitely a new experience. I mean, you're only going to get drafted one time. And for me, it was more of, you know, knowing and not being naive to the fact that, you know, obviously coaches gonna see something, but, you know, it's their jobs and they got to make choices. And it's right on the spot. And sometimes the decisions can become tough because you're not knowing. And, you know, obviously for me, I know what I'm going to do. My brother know what I can do. A lot of people know what I can do. But, you know, sometimes they just can't see it until it's time. And, you know, it's ways that you can handle it, but it's always how you can be able to handle it. And it's just taking that and say, use it into to be my fuel to my fire and be able to push even harder, because I know in myself that I got to keep pushing. I got to keep showing people because, you know, it's the right thing to do, and that's what I want for myself.
Listen, you've always bounced back. You've always come back. You've always bounced back. You're amazingly resilient. But in that moment, right, you said, quote, "I'm not a very emotional person. My identical twin brother, Shaquille, was typically the one who wears his emotions on the sleeve. But I broke down that night in the hotel room." What were you feeling in that moment?
It was an emotional time for me because you know that you put so much effort into everything you do. You know what I mean? It's blood, sweat, and tears, and you get everything you got every single day. And, you know, you want your work to be appreciated, but, you know, sometimes it just doesn't work that way. Sometimes your work is not finished. Sometimes you got to give even more. And I feel like a lot of us go through the same thing where, you know, times can get hard, but it's what you're going to do when the times get hard. And I just feel like it was the time for me to be able to understand what I was going through. And now I know I got to push even harder because even when I feel like I'm getting close, I'm still far away.
You know, the key phrase right there is something you had to understand that you were going through. And there's this great passage in the book where you guys literally only understand each other and that nobody on the outside, maybe even your family, doesn't understand. As an example, you write, "Y'all don't know what it's like to be me. Shaquille is the only one who understands me. Y'all don't know what else I go through. I work hard to get to where I'm at right now. When everybody else is giving 100%, I have to give 110%. It's still not enough. It's not fair. Why me?" Shaquille, what's it like to go through that experience with Shaquem and to feel his pain? Because you are the only one who probably knows.
No doubt. It's emotional because you feel like, why is it that he got to go through this? You know, and being so protective and being the brother that I am, you know, I used to pray at night and wish, like, "Lord, if it could be me, why wasn't it me? Like, if I could take his pain away, just give me his pain and I carry it on my back myself." And, you know, it's times at night where you pray and stuff like that, you just want to take the pain away, and I couldn't. And, you know, there's time where they picked him and he had to, you know, overcome and, you know, go through all these adversity and situations. And it was him that, you know, the Lord chose. And he chose the right one because you see how far he came today. And it's awesome to see. You know, I'm definitely proud of him for everything that he have accomplished. But it was time. Like I said, I just wish I could, you know, take all his words and his pain away. But I couldn't. That was just me being the protective brother I am. Understand what he's going through, you know. You know, I feel like no one knows him like I do. And just to see the thing that he went through. But look how far he came today. We both got through it.
Dude, there is so much love in this room. I mean, Shaquem, what's it like to hear? And I know you've heard this from Shaquille before, but what's it like to hear him say, "Why couldn't it have been me? I wish it had been me. I don't want this for my brother."
I mean, it's just who he is. I mean, throughout our entire life, you know, he always wanted to be protective of me and being able to, you know, feel like if I'm going through something, it's just like, you know what, let me take that pain off your shoulders. Let me carry it out. Let me carry that, some of that weight. And that's how he always was. I mean, even while I was going through something, I always came to him first. I always talked to him about certain things because it allowed me to take some of that weight off my shoulders to give it to him, and then we'll both carry it together. That's just a type of love and bond that we have each other. That you'll never have to carry the weight by yourself. You know, that's why we're together, and that's why we go every single place together, because, you know, we're always going to have each other's back.
So good. This book is called Inseparable. It's out right now. Now, when you talk about a book being called Inseparable, it's about the relationship between the two of you, but it's not just that. Like, Shaquille, obviously, it's about the entire family. Is there any way that you and Shaquem are here without the strength of the entire family around you?
Oh, no doubt. Without them, I have no idea where we'd be. You know, if you go into the book and it talks about the sacrifice and the situation that my parents was put in just for all this to even come. You know, we had 4 years old. My mom had to make one of the toughest decisions of her life. You know, to have his fingers and stuff removed just so he can be happy enough and feel comfortable enough to be able to move and play around and, you know, and not sit there and have that pain. Just understand that, you know, the age of my mom was at, and, you know, that's a hard decision to make. So it talks about, you know, all those decisions. And, you know, growing up, it talks about, you know, my brother making sacrifices, taking to each camp, you know, taking off work. You know, he's dropping everything to support our dream. So, you know, like I said, I have no idea where I'd be without them. So it's definitely more than just us. When we say inseparable, it's not about just me and my brother. It's about the whole family, you know, and the collective group and everybody else behind the 24, you know, seven. So it's cool to see.
You mentioned that what a excruciating, difficult decision your mom had to make. Shakeem, you and I have talked about this before, but that night that the pain in your hand was so excruciating, you attempted to cut it off. You and I have talked about this, but what we haven't talked about is the story that you went to the hospital to have it amputated, and you begged your mom to let you to go to preschool with Shaquille the next day. Is that how that went? And what was the rule about playing football? And how long did you honor that rule? We haven't talked about that. How did that go down?
It's just once it happened, once I knew that the fence was moved, it gave me another opportunity to do more things. I mean, it's different when you see your brothers and everybody.
Hear what you just said. Once I had my fingers removed, it gave me an opportunity to do more things.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And me being that age and trying to understand that, and me being where I'm at now and seeing it more, it's just when you see kids who have like different limbs taken away or you have the amputees, it's always what I can do now is not what I could have been doing. And it's so crazy because that's what I was thinking. It's not worrying about what I just had removed. It's about what I'm able to do now. And that's the opportunity for me to play ball. That's the opportunity for me to be with my brothers. The possibility of being a big-time football player. Everything was starting to open up once it was removed. I wasn't worrying about what was taken away. I was worrying about what I was going to gain.
But just so I'm clear, though, you were in preschool, right? And you had the procedure done, and you wanted to go to school the next day?
Yeah, got in trouble for playing football with my brothers.
And you want to play football the next day?
The bandages are still on my hand.
So the bandages are still on your hand. What was the rule about playing football? What did your parents say?
My mom didn't want to get my bandages dirty because, you know, just had surgery.
Right, dude, because you just had surgery.
And I came in with a dirty bandage, so that wasn't good.
What do you remember about that?
I don't remember much. that was a long time ago, but you know, I know my mom was pretty upset. But you know, it's kind of hard to get upset when you see your child so happy and enjoying his life, and you know, not seeing him go through that pain anymore. So I know she was happy about that. But like I said, it was a long time ago. It's kind of hard for me to remember that.
Incredible. Now, Shaquille and I have talked about your dad, Terry. Let me ask you about your father, Terry. For those of you, for people who do not know, what's he like and what kind of an impact has he had on both of you?
He's definitely a mad scientist when it comes to, you know, creating things for my brother. But no, he was just, I guess I feel like I got my overprotectiveness definitely for him because he's just always caring, you know. He did whatever he could just for the family, you know, to continue to provide. But he sacrificed so much, you know, taking the extra time to, you know, build things for my brother or just make sure that, you know, we was a step ahead of everybody, you know, just taking the time to work a little harder. He just always gave us, you know, some type of situation to be in to make us work even harder. I remember, it's always a good story to tell, but...
Do it.
I remember he used to have us doing calf raises. You know, when we take a shower, he said, just do 100 calf raises. So when you go to school, you know, we're probably like maybe 10 years old. So he's like, you know, when you go to school, the girl's going to be looking at you like, ooh, look at his calf muscles. They look pretty. So when he told us that, it's funny now because it never happened. He told us, he's like, yeah, just do 100 calf raises a day and the girl's going to love it. He's going to love it. And I did calf raises every single day in the shower, 200 calf raises every single night. And not one time.
And how much love did you get for it?
None.
Nothing. Nothing.
But he found ways to make it happen. So it's just cool. But, you know, he always found a way
to
motivate us. He's a motivator.
That is really funny. So now, one of the things that are included in the book are letters from people with limb differences. Why was that something that was so important to you both?
It was so important to me because, and I just want everybody to know that when you get a chance to inspire or motivate somebody, and sometimes you just want to be heard. I think for me growing up, I didn't get a chance to really see a lot of people or, you know, meet a lot of people who was like me, who wanted the same goals and had the same aspirations to be great. And, you know, it's always good to hear people and see their letters and hear what they're talking about because they just want to be heard too. And that's so important because this, them being heard, allows them to get that more push. Like, you know what? I'm going through the same thing he's going through. I can accomplish the same thing. Why not? Why not me? Why not just have the opportunity to put myself in the best situation to be the best me? So I love seeing that. I love having that positive energy from everybody. Cause that's what you want to know. You want to see that positive energy and you want to keep it going.
So you guys obviously learned so much from each other about so many different things. Shaquille, what have you learned from Shaquille?
You just can't feel sorry for yourself. I feel like I learned that the most. You know, it's always, you know, something that someone could be going so much worse. It could be going so much worse for someone else. And he never felt sorry for himself. Going through all the situation, the circumstances, and all the obstacles he had to overcome, he didn't second guess himself, and he never felt sorry for himself, and he kept pushing. So I definitely take that to heart, because it's no time to try to feel bad for yourself, because you got so many people looking up to you, and sometimes you got to continue to motivate, and you got to push through. If you can't push for yourself, push for them.
Shaquem, what about your second year now? You're going to enter your second year in the league. When you look back on that first year, I mean, that's what you spent your entire life working towards. What kind of thoughts do you have about your first year in the league?
Definitely a learning experience. I mean, it got better every single week. It was a chance for me to just become a vet. You know, college is over. It was a chance for me to learn how to take care of my body, learn how to be a great teammate, and just learn how to, you know, take in a lot of stuff from the vets. And I feel so confident about this year. You know, I finally feel comfortable out there, want to make plays, want to run around, and get a chance to rush more this year. I mean, later, man, the opportunities that's going to be presented for me this year is going to be amazing. I'm ready to get started. I didn't know how long the offseason was until I had my first one.
You talked about taking care of your bodies. Now, you guys, is it true? Have you hired a chef? And are you guys both focused on clean, burning fuel? What's that been like? And did you have to give up some of the grub you liked?
Yeah, no, we definitely had to give up a couple of things. But, you know, when it's important to you, it's okay going through that process. So I think this offseason I lost maybe between 15 and 20 pounds.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah. Just getting cut and lean, want to be able to move faster. But, you know, when you love it, it's cool to, you know, start sacrificing the things that you do love. But every now and then we get a little taste here and there. We get one cheat meal, not a day, one cheat meal, you know, a week. So, but besides that, you know, I feel great. I feel amazing. You know, and that's the best part about it. So I feel like that was one of the best decisions we made this offseason.
Feel faster.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, that's the key. It's not a cheat day. It's a cheat meal. So if you get one cheat meal, what day is it and what is the meal?
So we usually do it on a Friday. So we get a workout in. So that's the best time to really do it. You have to work out. And I feel like the cheat meal is the hardest thing to decide. So between wings, burgers, you're going to get cheesecake. And this is all one
sitting.
Can it
be as much as anything you want? I mean, can you do whatever
you
want?
You go for it.
So you got to imagine something great. And it gets tough. So really sit there and Google different things to eat. Because it is tough. When you get one cheat meal.
One opportunity a week.
You got to make that count, dude.
They got to make it count.
If you're on your grind, you got to make that count.
And the thing, I promise you, it's a tough decision to make. I know every time we do choose a meal, I just throw a cheesecake in there. You can't go wrong with cheesecake. So I just throw it in there. No matter what.
Like, where from? Where does the cheesecake come from?
Usually, when we back in Seattle, I definitely go to the Cheesecake Factory. You can't go wrong.
Even restaurants.
You know, we'll go grab
a slice or the entire cake.
No, just slice.
You can't do the whole cake.
That's crazy, right?
I think we'll be going backwards. We did the whole cake.
Did you guys ever push away from the table and say, man, we should have done better? That did not feel like we cheated hard enough.
So when we first started, the first
couple weeks was terrible. I was like, you know what? Let's do chicken tacos. I said, no, you know
that
what?
Ain't cheating.
And then I would eat it. I said, that wasn't bad at
all. I'm a legend if I do that. Your cheat deal makes me like the cleanest burning guy ever. Like, yeah, chicken tacos, man. Look at me.
We was messing up the first couple
it's like
weeks.
Kale or something.
I think the next week after that, I think we did shrimp or like some seafood.
Still not good
so
enough.
So we was doing pretty bad. We was trying to figure it out. And then I think the next one, I said, you know what? I just find the sloppiest burger we can find. And then that's when we started getting good at what we was doing. So, you know, it took us some time. We had to figure it out, but we definitely got it down packed now.
I'll be thinking about you fellas on Friday night. In fact, I'm going to cheat tonight. I cheat most nights. Listen, this book is amazing. The book is out right now. They are both authors. The book is called Inseparable, How Family and Sacrifice Forged a Path to the NFL. It came out on Tuesday. Guys, really quickly, by now people know where to find books. But if they want to find your book, what's the best way to go about getting the book?
I feel like right now the best thing to do is just go on Amazon. You can type it in. If some people don't feel like they want to read, it's on audio. You can listen to it. You know, plug your headphones in and just check it out. And separate with a book.
Don't buy multiple.
Yeah, check it out.
Don't buy one. Buy multiple and give them away.
Yeah,
guys, congratulations. Share. Good for you guys. I mean, it's so great to get caught up with you guys. You know, I've always loved having you both on the program, but to do it both here in studio, to take this kind of time, great to see you both. You look great. You sound great. Congrats on the book. Really appreciate you.
Really appreciate
it's a pleasure. Thank you for having
Shaquille
us.
And Shaquem Griffin. That was so fun. If you've got thoughts on that, you know where to find me. The telephone number is toll-free, 1-800-636-8686. Hit me up on Twitter. Find them on social. Buy their book. Buy multiple books. Pass it around. It's a really good thing. We ran heavy, but that was... So it turns out that Kawhi Leonard is not going to sign with the Clippers for as long as everybody thought that he would. Ah, Clipper Nation. You see, for a moment there, you thought the rug got ripped from you once again. But now you can take a deep breath and have a nice laugh all over again. I mean, you got to admit, Clipper Nation, for a moment you thought that you had finally woke up from that dream that you had last Friday night into Saturday morning when Kawhi Leonard and Paul George both decided to become Clippers. But now you're awake. This is real. This is happening. It's a thing. It's true. It's not a dream. It's real. Except instead of him signing with the Clippers for 4 years the way he could have, he signed a 3-year deal. And that 3-year deal includes a player option for that third year. So effectively, he signed for 2 years. Instead of 4 years, he really is signed for two, which matches up with the balance of George's deal. So the two of these guys are now running parallel and can become free agents in 2021, which means we can all relive this again in 2 years, which to me is great. It's awesome. I mean, seriously, that's not even sarcasm. It's awesome. It's great because he's making a choice. He could take the guaranteed money and the security that would come with a longer deal, or he can go with the freedom and the flexibility that comes with a shorter deal and bet on himself. And number two, it's great because, again, 2 years from now, we can have another summer just like the one we had, where guys are swapping teams. And the offseason in the NBA is better than a lot of other regular seasons for pro sports. Oh, and don't think that winning a title or two in the next 2 years means that Kawhi is going to stay. He just left a team where he won a championship, so nothing is guaranteed, especially from a guy like this that nobody really knows. And don't think that Kawhi is the only X factor in this entire thing. While nobody knew what Kawhi was going to do this summer, and again, I want to make the point, he didn't owe Toronto anything. While nobody knew what he was going to do this summer, nobody knew what Paul George was going to do this summer. So don't think that you can predict what Paul George is going to do in 2021 either. Because all along, we thought that he wanted to come to the Lakers. Hell, he said he wanted to come to the Lakers. Then he gets dealt to OKC, and the expectation was he would sign with the Lakers as a free agent. But instead, he re-upped with OKC. But a year later, he wants a trade. And he wants to be dealt not to the Lakers, but to the Clippers. So you really have no idea what that guy's going to do. We know we have no idea what Kawhi's ever going to do. And then speaking of that trade, how about this quote from Thunder executive VP and GM Sam Presti? Sam Presti had this quote included in the team's announcement of the trade. It was respectful. It was gracious. But you listen to this line and you tell me if you see or hear something. Quote, from the time that Paul and his representation made us aware of what had been transpiring and their subsequent request, our focus as an organization was identifying the best paths for our future. End of quote. So once again, really gracious, really polite, but there is a point in there. The point being, quote, made us aware of what had been transpiring. You know, the tampering, and the influencing from Kawhi Leonard. Like, Presti is too classy and thoughtful to let it all out, air it all out, vent it out in a statement. But you know he's pissed. The team is reminding their fans and the entire league and the whole world that they didn't want that trade. They were not looking to trade Paul George. That was not something they wanted to do. That was something that was done to them. Something they're not happy about. Something they're pissed about. The Thunder won't come right out and say it, but they don't need to. You know they typed out that statement with gritted teeth and probably really want to say something along the lines of Paul George re-signed with us last summer. Remember? Why would we move a guy that re-signed with us last summer? Things appear to be going so well. Then along comes a guy who started to get in his ear and talk to him and convinced him to come to us and demand a trade. It's tampering. It's dirty pool. We don't like it. You know that's what they really want to say. And by the way, I understand where they might be coming from, if that's their opinion. I understand why they might be pissed. I understand why they might think that Kawhi convinced their guy to make that trade request. Just know this. There's no way to stop that. There's no way to stop that. The only way to stop that is to take their phones away. And that's not going to happen. You can't stop guys from talking to each other. They're not middle schoolers trying to use a landline back in the day. That's it, Paul. I told you, no talking to Kawhi. He's a bad influence. I don't like him as a friend for you. He's getting in between you and your friend Russell. No phone for you. No Xbox for a week. Oh, and after that trade request, no going to the mall either. No movies. No fishing for a week. Now you go to your room and you think about your actions, young man. It's not happening. You're not taking his phone away. You can't change that. You can't fix that. Darius Leonard is my guest. Darius, great to have you on. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, man. Good. So to lay those numbers out, Darius, you're coming off a massive season. When you come off a massive season like the one you just had, I know you're not going to look to take a victory lap. So how did you go about approaching the off season?
I just approach it like I do every single day. What you've done last year is nothing. Just go down with everything you got in the film room or on the weight room or on the football field. What you're going to practice at, you're going to give 110% after the last each and every day.
All right, so from a team standpoint, when you look at what the team accomplished, the fact that you guys were completely able to turn things around after a 2-5 start and not only make the playoffs but advance in the playoffs, does it feel like to you that you laid a foundation for something special going forward?
Yeah, well, we think so, because, I mean, like you said, we started off a little slow, then we got it going. It just shows the character of our team that we're not going to quit and that we trust each other and we trust Frank Wright, what he got going on, and we hope to continue that sort of success.
Darius Leonard is joining us once again. You know, when I look at you and I look at the other members of that defense, the thing that really sticks out to me is the toughness and the physicality. When I look at your offensive line, you've got some tough, nasty dudes in that group as well. So in your opinion, how much of that team is defined by physical play and flat-out dominating the opponent?
I mean, a lot of it, because, I mean, that's what we thrive on, is being physical and making plays. And like you said, our offensive line is doing very well, and our D-line is doing well. So, I mean, that's where it starts. It starts up front, both sides of the ball. So if the up front is playing good on both sides of the ball, that means you can have success all over the field.
We're talking to Indianapolis Colts linebacker Darius Leonard. You know, in the introduction, I read off some of your accomplishments from last season. Listen, the truth is, if I read all of them, we may not have time for this conversation, because that literally was one of the best seasons a player has had in league history, literally. And you did that in 15 games while dealing with an ankle issue. But afterwards, you were talking about everything that you didn't do. Here's a quote. I wasn't named MVP. I wasn't a Super Bowl champion. I wasn't a Pro Bowler. End quote. How much does all of that motivate you then coming into this season?
It motivates me a whole lot, because, I mean, as a football player or as a man, you got goals that you set in life. And once you don't reach them goals, you want to just keep striving to reach them. So each day that I go work out, each day that I watch film, that's what's in the back of my head, is reaching the ultimate goal as a Super Bowl champion, being the MVP and being in the Pro Bowl. And once I reached them goals, that's when I set new goals to become the best player in the NFL.
All right, so you made no secret of the fact that there is a chip on your shoulder. You and I have talked in the past about how that got there and about how at times you were overlooked. Is there any part of you, when you come off a year like you just had, is there any part of you that feels like maybe that chip has gotten a little bit smaller after you showed what you could do last year? Or, I'm not even finished with the question, you're already answering it. It sounds like it's as big as ever,
yeah.
Is it?
I definitely still have that big chip on my shoulder. Like I just said, I haven't accomplished all of my goals. I mean, I still get overlooked. I still get trash talked about. So, I mean, yes, I still have a point to prove, and I still have that chip to prove that I belong in the NFL and I could be one of the top linebackers in the league.
Darius Leonard joining us. Now, it goes back, right? Like you've said in the past, that chip goes back to something that happened to you way back in the day. You were playing baseball. You were hitting in the cage. And a coach says to you, quote, son, your dad was good, and he was fast. What the hell happened to you? End quote. Darius, what do you remember about that, and what kind of an impact did that have on you?
I remember it was my 10th grade year playing baseball, and me and my best friend was out there just hitting extra. And I just remember the coach coming up, Coach Chad Herlong coming up. And when he said it, like all my pride and everything was broken, and I I never wanted to hear the words again because, I mean, I felt embarrassed, and I felt like that I was useless. So I just worked hard from then on out and said I was going to never hear the words from anyone else.
Did you ever double back? You find that, Coach? You guys ever have a conversation about that after the fact?
Oh, yeah. We laugh about it now. We have a good time about it. I tell him I appreciate it. He always laughs and say, well, if we want to leave, you want to be describing who you are today. So we always joke about it and tell each other. Yeah.
Thanks, Coach. Thanks for nothing. Thanks for not believing in me, Coach. How you like me now? But I know. I know you're not going to say that to him. Darius Leonard joining us. Earlier in the offseason, I'll say it for you. You were back in your hometown of Lakeview, South Carolina, for Darius Leonard Day, and you were back more recently to host a football camp. What's it mean to you to have the entire town behind you and supporting you, and then for you to be able to give back the way you have?
It means a lot when you have the whole town behind you because, you know, you're not just playing this game for myself or my family. You're playing it for the whole community just to let kids know that if I can make it, you can make it, especially coming from where we came from and seeing the whole city being behind me just brings joy to my face. And coming back, seeing kids with number 53 jerseys on, it just means a lot. And having a camp, I mean, giving back is something that I really take pride in because, I mean, I didn't have a whole lot growing up, and I know the kids who's back in the city doesn't have a whole lot, so why not just go back and give what I didn't have to someone who want to have something.
Darius Leonard joining us. You know, in terms of the statement you just made that you did not have a lot growing up, you did a video with the team's website where you showed everybody around Lakeview. You and I have talked about that journey in the past, but Lakeview is a town of less than 800 people. So for those who do not know, what was the life like growing up there? And is that a situation where everybody knows everybody?
Yeah, I mean, growing up in Lakeview, man, it was great. I mean, especially for a kid like me who didn't have too much, and I could easily walk around the whole town of Lakeview in a day, just go play basketball with friends, go to the baseball field, hit in the baseball field, like just messing around and knowing that I was safe because everybody in Lakeview knows everybody and everybody looked out and cared for each other. So growing up in a small town with everyone knowing everyone is pretty good unless you're trying to have something, you know, you're going to get out by the time you get home, but besides that, Lakeview is one great loving community.
Well, Darius, the thing about that is it's a small town, but at least in Lakeview, at least you have the lake life, right? You can hang out by the lake. Wait, there's not an actual lake there, is there?
No, we have a pond. it's crazy that it's called Lakeview, but we do not have a lake. We just have a big old mill pond.
So it's Lakeview, but there is no lake. Let's be very clear about that. There is no lake. Lakeview, right?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, but what you do have is the Four Points restaurant. So when you hit up the Four Points restaurant, you have that double cheeseburger. How big is that thing, and how good is that thing?
Man, it's probably, I'd say it's about 4 to 6 inches tall. And, I mean, it's really good. The best burgers you'll ever have besides going anywhere else.
Is it a cheat meal for you these days, or is that just fuel? Is that a regular meal?
Oh, no, it's a cheat meal. It's about $2.50. So, yeah, it's pretty cheap.
No, do not cheap. Cheat. Cheat, like a cheat day or a cheat meal.
Oh, a cheat day. Oh, yeah, most definitely. It's definitely a cheat day. I only can eat them maybe once or twice while I'm home. I can't eat them like I used to back in high school.
Darius Leonard joining us. You know, in that same piece, you talk about some of the activities back in the day, including chasing cows and horses. What is the technique involved in dealing with a cow? I've seen you get after quarterbacks. What is the technique involved in getting after a cow?
You know, they're very similar. You want to keep, because, I mean, when the cows get out, you got to point them back to the right direction. So you got to get in front of them, pin the hip, make sure they don't go around you, and then try to chase it back to the open gap or the open hole in the fence. And you kind of just got to have a lot of bit of athleticism, be able to move side to side.
I would imagine once you've done that, that pretty much eliminates any fear involved in running down a running back, right?
Yeah, I mean, if I can stand in front of a cow, I definitely think I can stand in front of a running back. So, yeah.
I love baseball. I really do. I love baseball. If you know anything about me, you know anything about this show, I love baseball. But the All-Star game, and it used to be the best of the All-Star games, is getting worse and worse and worse. And it may have hit rock bottom yesterday. But then I saw this hilarious report about all the scoreboard errors that happened at Progressive Field. Now, I wish I were at the game. I couldn't wait for the game to end last night watching on TV, but knowing what I know right now, I wish I were at that game. 35,000 people, as I mentioned, in attendance, got some serious entertainment. It was incidental, it was accidental, but they got entertainment. Now, the one guy who was not amused, again, was New York Met Jeff McNeil. As I mentioned, his first All-Star nod should have been one of the best nights of his entire life. First ever Midsummer Classic at bat should have been one of the best moments of his entire career. Gets up to the dish, on the big stage, everybody's watching, looks up at the gigantic Jumbotron, and does not see a picture of himself, but rather of Jacob deGrom. And it's not like somebody got to the scoreboard operator and said, hey, yo, you got deGrom up there, man, get that down. No, they left deGrom up there the entire at bat. And if you think that McNeil did not notice a massive deGrom mugger towering over the entire stadium, and if you think that McNeil did not develop a giant case of the red ass, then you don't know McNeil. Again, he was not happy about this. Let me read the quote one more time. It was tough to see DeGrom's picture up there. I didn't really like that. I wanted to see my picture up there. I know my family did too. They had, what, 2 weeks to get ready for this? That can't happen. End of quote. See, that's the thing, Jeff. Or should I say Jake? Jake McNeil. Hey, Jake McNeil, not only can it happen, it did happen. Just be glad that you were not one of the guys who were still alive that they turned into a guy who was dead. Remember that? The alive guys that were dead guys in that montage that the Mets rolled a couple of weeks back when they visually buried two players who were still alive and still walking this earth. The Mets did that to two of their own. Look, I get Jake McNeil's frustration. Jake plays for the Mets. And on that one night that he gets to escape the nightmare, the same kind of comical Bush League stuff follows him to Cleveland for the All-Star game. I mean, that is rough. Right now, the Mets' mark on the All-Star break is having their own guy misidentified as Jacob deGrom, and having a home run derby winner who hit 34 less home runs than Vlad Jr. But it wasn't only Jeff McNeil who got butchered on the scoreboard. David Dahl of the Rockies was listed as Davis Dahl on the Jumbotron. Wilson Contreras of the Cubs had his name misspelled. Cody Bellinger of the Dodgers. Ketel Marte of the Diamondbacks were shown with the Atlanta Braves logo next to their handles. So, like, this wasn't a one-off. This was a series of mistakes on the big stage. I mean, who's running that board? James Kelly? Have yourself a night, Cleveland scoreboard operator. Way to make it about you. The Indians had to do something yesterday that I don't think anybody thought anybody would ever have to do after the All-Star game. And that was swerve way out of their lane and apologize for their Jumbotron slap. Quote, "We are very excited about the positive reaction that we received about the All-Star Week events in Cleveland. It was obviously unfortunate about the scoreboard miscues, and we apologize that those occurred." End quote. Yeah, try telling that to Jacob McNeil or Jeff deGrom or Davis Dahl or whoever's knight and family that you wrecked and disrespected, C-Town. No one seems to have connected those dots, though, except me. You notice how every single error that occurred? How about this? Every single error that occurred involved a National League player in an American League ballpark. Notice how DeGrom's mugger went up during Jeff McNeil's at bat during a critical eighth inning with two on and nobody out. You ever think about that? Of course McNeil was rattled and flew out to left. So, are you sorry for screwing up the Jumbotron, or are you sorry you got caught? And what was really going on here? Just kidding, Cleveland. I'm sure it was an accident that all five scoreboard errors came at the expense of the National League, right? I'm sure that was just a big old coinky-dink. Howard Beck, great to have you. Howard, how are you?
Good, Romy. How you doing?
Great. Howard, you and I have been talking, but I got to reset this really quickly. You have covered this league for a long time in New York, here in Los Angeles. You and I have talked about this league for a long time. Have you ever seen a summer, though, like this one with relation to the NBA?
Yeah, it's funny, Jim. We try not to be a prisoner of the moment, right? And you know, like everything feels like the biggest thing we've ever seen at that moment. And you don't want to be hyperbolic. And you know me, I'm more of a nuanced guy. But no, we've never seen anything like this. This was insane. The pure volume of elite players changing teams, the way that some of them changed teams, the surprises along the way, like Paul George, things we couldn't even see coming, quickness with which it all happened, especially in the first hours of free agency on June 30th, when the floodgates just opened and hundreds of millions of dollars of deals were done within hours. It was just, you know, dizzying. So no, every way you slice this, this is new. This is unprecedented. It's dizzying. I don't know if this is a sign of more to come, and this is the new normal. I tend to think this is a little bit more of a blip, but there are aspects of it that are indications that things have changed.
We're talking to Howard Beck. Now, Howard, when you look at how the summer has played out and some of the larger themes, which I will touch on in a minute because you touch on them in a piece for Bleacher Report, I'll get to that. But were you at all surprised to see Kawhi Leonard agree to a shorter deal with the Clippers?
I mean, if we had all thought it through, I guess it's really not that surprising. I mean, there's two aspects of that decision. One is that the way the NBA's CBA is structured, max contracts are different for different years of service. So 1 through 6 years is an X number for your max, and 7 through 9 is a different number, and 10 plus years in the league is the highest max. So he's setting himself up to sign a bigger max in a couple of years. That's a smart business decision. We've seen other guys take short deals in order to take full advantage of the system. And we're living in a time where NBA players can afford to, quote-unquote, leave money on the table, at least guaranteed money, the long-term security, because the money is so staggering now that signing a shorter deal where, okay, you've locked in fewer years, you could have a career-ending injury, those risks don't seem as big of a deal when you've already pocketed over $100 million. And that's where these guys are now. So we see them take risks that a previous generation never would have taken. The other piece, of course, is none of us could have foreseen that Paul George was going to end up on the Clippers with him. And it makes sense also to line up Kawhi's contract with when Paul George will be in free agency, just because it gives them both every option in the world at that time. Doesn't mean they're not going to both stay with the Clippers for the long term. Just means that if you're Kawhi, what if things go a certain way? What if Paul George decided to leave? You leave your options open. And you just give yourself the leverage, too, which, we saw LeBron do that repeatedly in Cleveland on those one-year deals.
All right, so star players like a LeBron or a Kawhi, they've got the hammer. They've got that leverage. And now you've got a piece up on Bleacher Report, and you make the point that if you're running an NBA team, you can do everything right, and none of it's going to matter. Lay that out for me. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's funny because, even a few months ago, I'd written a story when you and I discussed it, I think, about the Clippers and the Nets and how they were doing everything right. They set themselves up perfectly for this free agency period to score big, and they both, as it happens, they both did. And it was a matter of smart management, smart cap management, great front offices, great coaches, and building a foundation that made themselves inviting, right? So the Clippers and the Nets, you could say, did everything right to get Kawhi and Paul George, to get Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And so we praise them for doing that. Wow, smart management, great job setting yourselves up, and you were rewarded, you earned it. That's fine. The Toronto Raptors and the Golden State Warriors also did basically everything right. In fact, were the two teams in the finals vying for the championship, and Kawhi Leonard won the championship, and he still left. So it was kind of the point of that you can do everything right and get the guys, you can do everything right and lose the guys. And it just creates this this dynamic in the NBA now where if you're an owner, if you're a GM, you almost have to just throw up your hands. I mean, you should still strive to do everything right to get the guy, to keep the guy, but you have to know at the end of the day, none of it may matter. And that was the thing that, and that was something that, you know, an agent had said to me, basically nothing matters. Guys are just going to go where they want to go, whether it's to play with friends, whether it's to be in a city that they like better, whether it's to play closer to home, whatever it may be. And this is the other kind of sobering, I think, reality, Jim, is that in the past in the NBA, if you're a GM and you're trying to build a sustainable team, the two things that you can do to keep a guy, to make a guy want to stay, contend for titles, pay him the most money, and through bird rights, you had that ability. Well, bird rights are just irrelevant now. Guys are willing to leave money on the table, and a bunch of them just did. And obviously, championship contention isn't enough either. Even in Jimmy Butler's case, he not only left money on the table leaving Philly for Miami, but he left a contender for a non-contender. So again, nothing matters.
Howard Beck joining us. There are so many interesting things to pull out of that answer. But in the case of Jimmy Butler, why do you think he did that? Why, if you're Jimmy Butler at that age and that juncture of your career and you've got a chance to play for a title, why would you leave for a team that does not have as good a look at it, arguably, and leave money on the table?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I guess, you know, you could say to an extent, Jimmy didn't choose to get traded from Chicago to Minnesota, and he didn't choose to get traded from Minnesota to Philly. And this was a case where he was finally a free agent who had a choice, who could decide his own destiny, and that's a running theme with a lot of these guys. So there's that piece. Then there's was he really that happy there? And I'm not convinced that he was. I think that Jimmy did a really good job of fitting in, I think much more so than people realize. You know, there was the early flare-ups and, you know, him going at Brett Brown, that kind of stuff. But we didn't hear a peep out of Jimmy Butler or any complaints for the last couple of months there, and he did exactly what they needed him to do, which was be that clutch player who could make the big shots late in games, who could create. That's not something Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid could do at the level that Jimmy Butler does. And so he played the role that they needed him to play. But that team has some strange dynamics. Those two young guys, in Simmons and Embiid, the dynamic between them, the dynamics around them, it's, you know, I just been hearing rumblings going into free agency that Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris both had some concerns about chemistry there, and that one or both were going to leave. But you always figured that with one left, the Sixers were going to do everything possible to keep the other, and that's how it played out.
We're talking to Howard Beck. Howard, go back to your other point. Like, the point being that teams can do everything right and it still might not matter. That Toronto did everything right and it didn't matter. Golden State did everything right and it didn't necessarily matter. That said, if you're the Milwaukee Bucks and you're watching all this play out, how worried are you when it comes to Giannis and his future?
I think you could probably answer this both ways. You should be super worried because you've seen how this goes. You've seen all these guys leave. And we've seen especially guys leave smaller markets for larger markets. Now, the way Giannis is built as an international player who grew up in Greece and who I don't think has the kind of, you know, he's not looking at the Hollywood lights and thinking I need to be part of that or the, you know, the Broadway lights. That's not how he's constructed. And I don't think they're worried about the big market, small market thing or the glamour market thing where he's going to be, you know, drawn by any of those things, the off the court stuff. But you've seen so much movement that how can you not be concerned? Everybody, no matter what their background, their personality, their career path, everybody seems to leave at some point. And so you should be worried. On the flip side of it is the Bucks are doing a lot of things right. Again, doing everything right might not matter, but they're doing a lot of things right. They've built a really good team around them, but they don't have that second star. And even though the era of the super team may be over, we don't have any teams with three or four stars right now. We got a lot with two. The Bucks have one. All due respect to Chris Middleton, who made the All-Star team and who's a very, very good player, he's not at the level of, you know, when you're talking about the LeBron-AD pairing or the Kawhi-Paul George pairing or some of the others around the league. Giannis doesn't have that second guy who is a top 15 player year in, year out. And will that matter? I don't know. I mean, they've got a really good cast around him. But they did fall short this past season. I think if they make the finals, you figure they're probably fine. On the other hand, the Raptors won a championship and Kawhi left anyway. We'll keep coming back to that.
Right. I mean, all bets are off because of that. And again, I made the point, Howard, that he didn't owe them anything. He didn't owe them anything and they did everything right. It just didn't work out. Last thought then. So the Lakers obviously wanted Kawhi badly. They didn't get him, but they did get Anthony Davis. So it's not like the Lakers came up empty. What's it though say about the Knicks that they did pretty much come up empty?
Yeah, and it's interesting because it was all four teams in the big markets, both L.A. teams, both New York teams, all had max room and an ability for double max room in a few of them. The Knicks had double max, and they were the only ones who came out with nothing. It's an indication – there's a lot of things wrapped up in that, Jim, and I could go on for hours about the Knicks, as you know, and I'll try not to. But I think that, one, it is an indication that the Knicks did not build correctly. They did not have a foundation there the way that, say, the Nets and the Clippers did, or that the Lakers had with LeBron. The Lakers didn't even need a foundation. They had LeBron. And the Clippers and Nets had foundations of young, solid teams where a star could come in on day one and know they could win. The Knicks did not have that. They had a 17-win team with a lot of young, unproven guys and some vets who were, you know, just irrelevant, essentially. They couldn't present the right look. And they were still – they were using a plan from 10 years ago, basically, where you just clear the decks and say, well, we're the Knicks, we're New York, we're a big market, the stars will come. Things have changed. Guys want to win immediately, and they didn't have the template for that. And look, they do have a reputation. Charles Oakley was quoted in the New York Times last week saying, listen, I talk to players around the league all the time, and players around the league have a lot of reverence for Charles Oakley. They don't like the look of him being ejected from, dragged out of the Garden, and then – you know, a year later, you've got, or 2 years later, whatever it's been, Dolan, the owner, ejecting a fan for having the gall to say sell the team. I mean, there's a reputation the Knicks have now that is so negative, and it is affecting the way players are making decisions. I can't speak to every single star who turned them down and why, but there is an overall impression of them that is certainly hurting them when it comes to trying to draw the top players.
Howard Beck is a senior NBA writer for Bleacher Report. He is the host of the Full 48 podcast and coming in here and doing what he does. Howard, great job. Always good to talk to you, and I appreciate the conversation. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, Jim. Thanks, man.
Let's go to Green Bay quickly. Caleb. Caleb, what's up?
Hey, Vance, what's going on, man?
What's up?
Amazing sit-down with the Griffin brothers, the love they have for each other. Thanks for having them on. You're talking about Jocko Willink. You're talking about cheat meals. Some people have cheat days. I've had a cheat life. I'm tired of being a great big fat person, so I got in touch with the jungle's other favorite great big fat person, Beaks in Pluto's vicinity, and we agreed to a gentleman's wager over who could lose the most weight, but neither our health and happiness nor a friendly bet was enough motivation, we felt, so we decided to get some charities involved. We started a GoFundMe page, GoFundMe.com/Beaks versus Caleb, Beaks vs. Caleb. If you have the app, just search for Beaks versus Caleb. You should be able to find it. Whoever loses the greater percentage of weight by November 1st will receive 75% of the donation for his favorite charity. The loser will donate the remaining 25%. Beaks has chosen Surf Aid, which provides malaria prevention, access to clean water, and mother-child health services to Indonesian communities that are isolated. I've selected a local charity here in Green Bay called Golden House, which offers shelter, counseling, and legal assistance to victims of domestic abuse. All the info is pinned at the top of my Twitter feed. Follow me at Caleb in Green Bay if you need the link. We're looking for a grand to start off with, which shouldn't be too hard among your 7 billion listeners. Final weigh in November 1st. I started at 284. Beaks was 243. Clones, throw some money at us while we're on the treadmill so we can donate it to a good cause. Jim, I'll talk to you soon. Hey, Beaks, bench the donuts. Thanks.
Good job, Caleb. I'm on their GoFundMe page right now. It is legit. It's a great cause. It's great competition. Clones, jump on that.
Bench the donuts.
Good night now.